one point from a conference that I was chairing last week, and then a couple, well, 5 points from what we've heard today, really to put them to you as propositions that you may want to talk about now, or you may want to go away and think about, or you may just want to forget completely. So there's a range of options that you can vote for later. Last Thursday and Friday, I chaired something called the Digital Cultural Content Forum, which is an international meeting that was in Berlin. And we were looking at a range of issues to do with digital cultural content, surprisingly. Two things I wanted to raise here as issues to think about. And the first is the tension between public and private. And what I mean by this is what I would call the point of departure. We spent a morning at the a really interesting museum in Berlin, which is the Museum of Computer Gaming, and looked at how gaming it had developed completely with a commercial market, of course. Lots of money put into it, but responding to demand and reacting to demand and the developments of technology. So what we have now, you can see a kind of development through a whole series of stages from Pong. Do you, anybody remember Pong? It was a bit after Educating Archie, but the same sort of thing. And then in the afternoon of that day, we sat down and had a discussion about the grand projets that are being developed around drawing together various digital collections. So Europeana, the Digital Public Library of America, some individual national digital libraries being developed in Finland and Norway and other places. And what struck me was that if you look at those two different development profiles, the gaming one, which is very much producing a product that is tested in the market as well as being developed and therefore responds very quickly, and the big publicly supported projects, which in a sense are trying to build a replica of a very traditional model that don't particularly think about the interface with the user as perhaps you would see through gaming. So that's an issue about whether one is good and one is bad, I don't know, but that's just struck me as a significant contrast between those two debates. And the other one was the use of terminology, and we all suffer from being captured by language. But today we've talked about crowdsourcing, and we talked about crowdsourcing there, and I think crowdsourcing is now an inadequate word to describe what's going on. There are different sorts. I mean, I've written down here three very quickly. There's crowdsourcing, which is submission, the submission of an object into a collection. There's crowdsourcing, which is analysing an existing collection of material. And there's crowdsourcing, which is more about creating a sustained community of interest, which has long-term momentum rather than project-based. And I think we need to start unravelling the different meanings that we're talking about when we use words. And another thing, when we were talking about this, we were talking about, of course, social networking, but we also came up with the concept of antisocial networking, and I don't know whether we want to start building a collection of that. Anyway, the five things from today, from what Stuart and Ali were talking about, crowdsourcing and the capture of images of objects and what happens to the objects that are captured, I think is going to be a really interesting challenge for the future, because what's being created is a born digital object, because the only way it's disclosed to other people is as something virtual, and there's no way of guaranteeing what happens to the objects that have been captured in that way. Do you follow that? I mean, that's probably not terribly logical, but nobody can take those objects and put them in a museum, because if more and more of this is going to happen, nobody's going to be able to cope with having the physical things, and people will chuck them away. I've got loads of stuff that my dad collected during the war. What do I do with them? In the end, they'll probably just get chucked away and that sort of thing. So crowdsourcing becomes, I think, digital by default. What does that mean for the future? Point two, the tension between the professional and the citizen, I think, is something which is going to, over the next two or three decades, is going to become much, much more of a challenge. Because there's an issue, I think, which is a kind of dialectic between freedom and control. The professional wanting to control the product and the citizen wanting to have freedom in what they can do with it. And on that basis, who's going to be calling the agenda? Can't read my own writing here. Yes, at DCCF, a senior person at the museum, Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, who's leading on digital stuff, said, all this social networking stuff is fine, but it's not really relevant to serious collections. Please write an essay on that issue, because it seems to me that's something that needs to be thought about. Number three, in terms of the infrastructure, this is the stuff that my PhD is supposed to be about, are we talking here about we're expecting it to be status quo 2.0? Or are we talking about a revolution which is going to create new beginnings? So if it's digital by default, if there are going to be challenges to the traditional professional role, and I think the history of the world is a really powerful example of how the future is going to engage these new routes to knowledge. So it might be gaming, but using public service broadcasting as a mechanism to interpret and connect people with knowledge. Is that going to change the nature of the institutional infrastructure that we all face? Number four, again, I can't move my writing. Oh, yes. Where will the power sit in the future? Who's going to be calling the shots? Is it still going to be a professional elite, or is it going to be much more rooted in communities and the flash mobs and the crowds and all of that? Finally, on all of this, and it seems to me that this is a question of very significant debate, how does all of that fit into what Robert was talking about this morning on the big society? I don't necessarily agree with the way he pitched the story, but certainly we can recognise that government policy is looking much more to driving things down into communities. And if on the one hand we're all enthusiastic about that crowdsourcing, the point at which a senior politician sees those two coming together is going to be a really significant challenge to a lot of people. So those are my thoughts that you may or may not want to talk about. Who's going next?
Telling stories, and I was asked to come up with an idea. That goes there, this goes here, okay, fine. So what happens next in terms of JISC has funded all these projects in developing community content, and we funded Runcoco, and it's been very successful. So what's the sequel to that? What does JISC do next? Well, actually following on from the Retronaut, rather than going forward, I'm actually going to look back, because where did this come from in the first place? Well, this came from the Poetry Archive, the digitization project of Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen that Stuart actually started, well, 10, 12, 15 years ago. I came to see you and wrote an AHDS case study. It was a long time ago. And then just got the project application for the digitization of the manuscripts. And hidden within there was a Great War Archive. It wasn't the main thing you were doing, was it? The main thing you thought you were doing was the digitization of the poetry manuscripts, but the Great War Archive was what that came out of that. And once we saw that, and once we saw what we could do with it, it led on to a lot of the other projects. It was like, ooh, look what we can do here. It was amazing. And that's why we also commissioned Chris Batt to do his report on two-way engagement. And he pointed out the things he just said. Actually, he's repeating himself from 2 years ago. There's lots of different types of engagement. It's not just crowdsourcing. You know, there's research-focused ones, but there's ones where you're facilitating the community to tell stories and develop their own sense of identity. And in actual fact, Chris pointed out projects from much earlier on, from earlier NOF digitization projects, from the start of the 2000s, the one at Swansea University, the Coalfields web material, which got people who had been involved in the mining industry to upload collections and ideas and histories and thoughts on the history of mining in Wales. And he also pointed out one that had been going since the 1990s in Northern Ireland about the conflict archive and the internet, which recorded official documents but also informal, unofficial documents and opinions on the troubles in Northern Ireland. And what he was really pointing out was that these type of projects actually had a history much longer than just the poetry archive and stuff. And just speaking to people today, well, the Victorians didn't have a digital side of things, but there was somebody from zoology, is a zoology person? Here we go. And we were talking about how the enthusiasm for natural history in the Victorian era, late 19th century, there are similarities to how crowdsourcing is working now. And I also had a tweet from Alexandra, who's sitting over there, saying somebody had actually done a PhD on volunteering today and volunteering in 19th century Glasgow, or something like that. I can't quite remember, but making those kind of connections. So in actual fact, maybe crowdsourcing isn't so new. I use the quotes here because I agree with Chris. There are lots of different things about it. Crowdsourcing's not, you know, you can't put it all together in one thing. So that was, I actually started looking back rather than looking forward. But what we've seen today is also a kind of a range of projects, different types of engagements, over many different subject areas within within the academy. So we've seen the Galaxy Zoo ones, we've seen Arfin's project in astronomy, we've seen Transcribed Bentham, which is about, well, philosophy, but it's also broader than that. And we've seen social geography, we've seen the Strandline ones. We've seen the poetry and history within the poetry archive. And then I think the Retronaut, he's in his own space, which isn't really a subject area, but it's a fantastic space. But whereabouts is it? I don't really know. And we've also seen, I think, if there was a word cloud for today, I think this would be the one that was the biggest. Nearly everyone has talked about creating stories. And I thought it was going to be more the community-based ones that would just talk about stories. But actually, Arfin, when he was giving his presentation, he also talked about developing stories and how you integrate with your users and your collaborators and how they think about you. And so that just kept on. And even the British Museum one talked about stories as well in a fantastic way. What also was apparent from the Retronaut was this idea of curation. You take this content and then you shine a different light on it. You point it in a different way. You think about it in a different way. And that gets users interested and engaged in a new way. And this also links into kind of identity. Your end users become interested because it's talking to their idea of space. It's doing something different to them. This is very evident in the Strandline ones, and I think I didn't hear it, but also the one from Mog over there. I think, you know, the idea of the users learning stories and learning identities and getting to grips with all this information on the internet and how it can actually, when it's processed and created in a particular way, how it helps them. And I thought those were really strong themes for today. And again, you know, so this is a point that's already been made. The type of engagements were different, though. Some were very much more about kind of research focus. Some were much more in different types of communities and how it, and it goes between it. So what, how does just see crowdsourcing as part of its larger digital content program? I kind of made this up today. Well, it's not just crowdsourcing, and we do other stuff in digital content as well. So we have other projects which are much more research-focused about clustering digital resources, and we have things on kind of just doing large-scale digitization. There are lots and lots and lots of different ways of creating digital content, not just the crowdsourcing thing. Crowdsourcing is one of those, a very powerful one, but there are other ways of doing it. But what I don't think it should be in the future is something different set aside. I don't think we will have specific programs related just to doing this kind of thing, because I think this thing is so important that it should be developed or thought about for any digital content project. Should think about how can we work with all different types of users. We don't want to kind of ghettoize this type of project as a special one. Any kind of digital content project should think about this. It's more than just public engagement, as Arfin said. It's also about research and having a purpose. But it should be a part of many different projects doing many different kinds of things, can all make use of crowdsourcing in different ways. And so I think for the kind of, I don't think we'll have so much one project to cover crowdsourcing, although that may change. But just in terms of the forthcoming GIST calls that we're going to have coming out in terms of content, we're going to have things about open educational resources, large-scale digitization, and we're also going to have something on clustering digital content. And all of these things, all of these different types of projects, I hope to see bids coming in and applications coming in which are about crowdsourcing or the kind of things that we've talked about today, and how you can, it's not just about with based in academy, but how users outside the academy can improve the research process or how they can better engage with universities. And not all projects will be wanting to do that, but some will be wanting to do that. And I think what we've learned today is a good way of taking that forward. And a final point I wanted to make, if I ever see another application which talks about interest for the general public, I'm going to throw it away, because the general public is just one large entity, doesn't really exist. These are basically a list of different groups I kind of thought off the top of my head. But I'm quite sure that all of these could form fantastic crowdsourcing projects in many different ways. I leave it up to you to best how to come up with that. But if you think about them here and think about how you can engage them in so many different ways, then you can see we're really at the moment, we're just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg in terms of what can be done with crowdsourcing projects.
Because I've already given a presentation, I'm just going to be quite brief, and I think we want to turn this over to the crowd to make some comments. So just a few things, which just to say, one of the things which I did agree with in the first presentation was that quote from Mark Twain. And I think it's something which, if you are interested in doing this, don't overthink the problem. If you do sit down and start listing the reasons why you shouldn't do this, you will never get started. And that, to be honest, that's been my motto for 20 years in IT, to just have a go, because it isn't that difficult. And I'm glad you said there is a history, and picking up what Tristram said, there is a history to crowdsourcing. We're not new, it's just that what we've got now, the tools make it a lot easier. And it can be done. So in following up from that, the Runcoco site, which Alan said, obviously that's coming to an end, it does have a lot of guides, a lot of really sort of really useful things saying how you can do this. And above all, I don't think we've ever mentioned this, the software we used to do all this collection, we open source, so it's freely available. So if you want to take that and use it, it's a simple way of collecting material and chucking it out for browsing and searching, quite a simple thing. The second thing, which I think has come through all the talks, and I'd certainly support, is the community is the key, building up the community. And that's what we experienced in the German project. You have to get that community building up and the momentum behind it. But the project that Alan alluded to, where I did on the Anglo-Saxons, which is a kind of really, you know, you're focusing in on a very few people. What I found there was that the community that was really got quite interested in that was in that discipline. But it was an international small strand of academics who were just interested in that. And I think, you know, if we try and pitch generally, hey, everyone, the public, you know, there's no harm in doing that, but you've got to really target at the subdomain. I think that's what I found there. And I very much believe there are quite a few differences in the disciplines there. Picking up what Chris said, and this was my experience, and I think this has come through in some of the presentation I've seen, It's hard for us to swallow this pill in academia, but there are a lot of people outside academia who know a lot of things. And great, so why don't we use them? We found this in the project when we went to the Flickr site. And some of the comments and analysis of the images there, which were coming in from what we assume were members of the general public, were really spot on. And they showed a level of enthusiasm and knowledge which, you know, I think we've just got to bow to and say there is a lot of, you know, really bright people out there who know a lot of the stuff, so we can use that. But finally, the thing which I'm looking forward to is we're collecting all this stuff, and that's great, and it's really exciting, and I'm enjoying working on these projects and going out and do submission days. It's a wonderful experience. But what's going to be the exciting thing for me is when people start using all this stuff. I mean, you know, we've got now 20,000 images, say probably about 16,000-17,000 of those from the First World War, which nobody has ever seen, apart from a few members of the general public. What I was really going to excite me is when someone, and I hope it's me one day, has the time to start looking through that and seeing does it change our story about that particular period. But all of the archives we've collected, we're putting a lot of emphasis on collecting it and collecting it, but it's really going to be the interesting thing when it changes the research. So that's it.
Thank you. If I can have the microphone. You certainly. I've been mandated. I've got to stand in the middle so I can record both of you. I'm going to stand up to because I feel it's as close as I'm ever going to get to being a conductor of an orchestra to try and see whether we can get some discussion going. But we've got 20 minutes. We've thrown out some thoughts and ideas. You were very good at being interactive first thing this morning. But it's up to you. I don't think we're in a position here where we're going to try and answer your comments necessarily, although we can add our own. If you haven't got the energy for doing it, then you're going to have to sit here and meditate for 20 minutes. So it's, you know, there's no time off for good behaviour or anything. So having said that, I now throw it open to you to comment on what we've said, what you've heard from today, how angry you feel, how excited you feel, how big your society is. So I'm looking for a hand to go up. Come on. Two hands are up. Well, we'll save that for a moment for the quiet period and the slow movement. So let's start at the front. Oh, okay. Microphone, excellent.
I'm thinking back to JISC and the holy grail of the reusable object, something that people have been looking for a long time. A couple of things that Stuart said just now about Runcoco, I think are very much in the line of things that JISC and other organizations should be doing, which is first creating things that are genuinely reusable. So making the software open source so that it doesn't have to be reinvented. So I think that's the first thing, that's very important. And I think that, as we go forward, is the kind of thing that will make it possible for a bigger society to do things. And then something else, which was, things are very genuinely getting easier. I think you mentioned perhaps it would have been even better if you'd gone to Flickr to start with. There are so many things which projects simply don't have to reinvent now. And I think the way that we can use so many existing bits of software that are available for free is a huge step forward. The other thing, of course, is that none of the things about people getting involved with uploading things and commenting would be there without the facility that people have now, that filling in a box is actually a very familiar thing to do. And so I think we are moving into a completely new era.
I'm going to keep going for the moment unless you wanted to respond. There was an arm up there. Alistair's remembering all of this to answer all the questions in a moment.
Thanks.
Go on.
Well, right now in the academic world, there's a focus on, because of the REF that's coming up, the difference between public engagement and impact. And it seems to me that a lot of these crowdsourcing projects are focused on public engagement and involving people in the creation of a collection rather than on how that collection is then used and the kind of impact that might have on policy formation or research or teaching. And I wonder whether in the future maybe research projects, when they're applying for funding or whatever, will be asked to focus more on not only how they engage the public, but also the kind of impact, which is different, that the collection they create or whatever it is will actually have, how that might be embedded in teaching, or the kind of results it might have in scholarship or policy or whatever, and whether that's the kind of next stage, because it seems that there are a lot of amazing resources and collections that are being built up, but it's like where we go from there and whether that will be a kind of focus.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking for more hands to go up, please. Go on.
Two questions. One is how much Linda has paid everyone to reference knitting in all their presentations, because that's been quite incredible. That is Linda from the Knitting Reference Library, sat in the front. And secondly, more seriously, I deliberately put the cat among the pigeons by asking Robert Ashton to speak at the start. Unfortunately, I was pulled away, so I didn't really see any of the discussion that followed. And I'm wondering if somebody could, maybe from the front, but somebody could pricey feelings and emotions, and was he ran out on a train rail or was he lauded out of the room?
Reactions to that question. Come on, I'm not going to, I mean, I can say something, but I don't really want to. Some comments from what Robert said. Relevant to what we were talking about, irritating, blinding light. Okay.
I don't think we need the meta. It's useful to have the metaphor of the big society to impress government. I don't think we need to use it though to try and explain why we're doing this. And I kind of thought he was at a level which is above what we're trying to do with all this stuff. We don't need to talk about the big society and how worthy it is. And we've got great examples and great case studies of why this is a good idea and why we want to do it. And I didn't feel that what the level he was talking at really helped us very much today.
Thank you.
Get the mic.
I'm.
Well, just go for it anyway.
Okay. I'm still waiting for crowdsourcing to be used for policy in the UK. I don't think we've... I think the Number 10 tried to do this quite early on in the current government, and it was... We watched it very closely, and very quickly it succumbed to spam and stupid comments. And I actually think that there's something very attractive about, and something, you know, going to the core of what, you know, whether we're in a, you know, democracy and modern political systems, like whether somebody could come up with, like, how can we meaningfully actually crowdsource opinion in the UK between elections, and actually, you know, referendums are expensive. Web platforms are cheap compared to going around to everybody's house. And I think I haven't seen any good examples of that yet. I think that JISC is a large enough organisation that it could sponsor something along those lines. But I think it's a really hard problem. I'm not saying I think it's easy.
I feel bound to respond to that, if I may, because it's the question of power, isn't it? So long as Number 10 asks you to comment on what they want you to comment on, power sits with them. But the most powerful mechanisms for impacting on national policy surely are the super injunctions and Twitter. Because in a period of 12 hours, we saw government policy, not policy, but their perception of the problem shift from being something that they could manage to being something that was completely out of control. Now, I'm not sure what that means about the future, but it does strike me that we're seeing in some of these new developments, things where the power has shifted dramatically very quickly to, for good or bad, to a completely different place. And somehow or other, as, I wanted to say we, but it's not me now, I'm just kind of outside all of this, but those involved in looking at digitization of content and its management and disclosure are dealing with one set of issues. That national policy agenda is a really interesting one in how it reacts to it. So that seems to me very exciting. Just to come back to the point about the big society and what we heard this morning, I think I would stick to the point I raised, that it's all happening too quickly to make any sense at all. But you all need to remember that the debate, the comments that he were making are the comments that you'll hear senior politicians in government making. Their expectations are it's all going to happen. And I would have thought there's a strong agenda to take to them, talking about what's already been happening in the so-called crowdsourcing agenda as something where big society is working. It's an argument for strengthening what's already happening there. No, that doesn't deal with hospitals and libraries necessarily, but it's a good advocacy point as far as I can see. But any other comments on that? Stuart?
Well, just a comment on that. I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic, but I think there is a danger in using the crowd to perform policy, because the crowd is kind of self-selective. And if you want a humorous example, Anne Widdecombe on Strictly Come Dancing, that was the crowd just having a laugh, basically, and just trying to see how long they could extend the joke. But it wasn't, if you were thinking of that as a policy, you'd be very worried, because it was nothing to do about how good a dancer it was. It was just because it was a freak show. Going back to the point about citation, and I think that is interesting in impact. The problem which we have, because we've put all this material up, occasionally someone will write to us, go, I want to use that image in an article in an academic journal. And you can say, right, suddenly this has helped them form their academic argument. But it's only because they haven't quite understood the terms and conditions of release that we've said. So a lot of it might be going on, which we don't know about. And trying to find that is quite difficult when you go down the path of collecting it and then making it freely open. And it's monitoring and tracking its use can be difficult. But it is very key. And it came back to my point about, you know, we've collected all this stuff. It's going to be really interesting how it changes or allows research to go in different paths.
Yes, if I can just I don't disagree with the risk of the crowd influencing things that they shouldn't be influencing necessarily, but I think it's a reality that it does. And people listen, and if it can have an impact on something like the Human Rights Act, then it's going to have impact in other areas as well. Whether it's good or bad, I think, remains to be seen. Sarah?
Building, I suppose, on some of the points we've already had, which is partly about where should the drive for this come from? Is it pursuing and exploring academic arguments? Is it about public engagement? Is it about trying to achieve impact, which can mean so many different things? And I think it's really good, actually, that we've got that impact agenda. It can give research more purpose, but we've got to be careful. And ownership, I suppose. And we talked a bit about sustainability and how do we sustain these things and who will be looking after these things or controlling them in the future. And I just wanted to ask for comments on maybe some of the relationships between cultural organisations like museums and galleries and academia and, let's not call them the general public, we're all lifelong researchers, whatever we are, you know what I mean? We can all have hobbies that become jobs that become hobbies again. It's all part of a continuum. And I think there's always been an interesting historical tension to some extent between the people who look after the stuff and the people who want to do things with the stuff. And who should then make the decisions about how the money is spent? Is it the people who want to ask the questions about the stuff, or is it the people who want to create and look after the stuff?
Yeah.
So that might not be very coherent, but Chris looks like he might know what I meant.
Oh, I do, yes. I don't think I need to answer it personally, because I think that's the big question that's emerging now. But let's just see if anybody else wants to rise to that challenge. Fred.
Two of the things that came out in the summary here was two of the things that came out in the summary was new ways of creating content and broader and wide-ranging definitions of crowdsourcing. And it seems to me both of those kind of challenge the roles and responsibilities of professionals within here. I talk about in the education world being a broker, that actually you use your expertise as part of an engagement process, not that you use your expertise to say, I'm really good at this and you don't know very much. So I think we should be doing more in looking at the ways and the standards and the processes that we use in creating content and the different approaches to crowdsourcing and think about the way that changes our roles and responsibilities in terms of engagement.
Mm. Mm.
Can I just also say about working on a project which uses this beacon target, which is about public engagement, and I think it's exactly the wrong word, public engagement, it's PR. Can we tell the public more about what we do, not can we engage the public?
That's
right. It's got the wrong criteria for interpreting what good public engagement is. So I think one of the things that we can do as a professional community is actually push up to the policymakers what better criteria for interpreting engagement, sourcing, content are.
Did you want to?
This example that I pulled up here, which may not be particularly clear, is partially in response to Arfin's question about policy. This was, as most of you know, the city of Christchurch had a pretty devastating earthquake a few months ago. They're in the process of putting together designs for rebuilding the centre of the city. They put it out to the general public to say, how do you want to see your city rebuilt? And there's lots of interesting, I've had a look around it and you see lots of interesting ideas. Some are a bit kind of liberal hippie and might not work in a free market town or city, but they're interesting anyway, and there's engagement, there's people getting involved. And what's interesting about that is, in response to Sarah's question about who makes the decisions here, well, they make it clear in this site that some of where the negotiation, the conversation, how far it goes, and then there are certain things that are not negotiable. And the planners say, no, we can't talk about these. This is what we have to deal with, and we're going to deal with it ourselves. And so they make it quite upfront that there's a conversation we're having, but it can only go so far. And they line that out. And, it'll be different in cultural heritage, but it's just that's how it's been dealt with in the situation.
Okay. I've just been warned that we've got 5 minutes left. I'm foisted with my own petard, if you see what I mean. Are there any other issues that anybody wants to put into this? So I'm not going to respond personally to Sarah stuff, because it'll be 3 years before I've got an answer, I'm afraid.
My question is, we've had the Run Coco support project, which has lasted for a particular period of time to help other projects in this area. What would you like to see to help you more with the crowdsourcing thing? I mean, not just in terms of money for projects, but in a more specific, tangible way. What's the most helpful thing that can help you do this type of project in the future? And how can GIST provide that support?
I think one thing we should be looking at is shared infrastructure so that we don't all go off and rebuild the same thing. There are tools out there and there are all kinds of things, but I would suggest we look at sort of shared infrastructure that provides shared software as a service so that you can just fire up a crowdsourcing utility and shared storage so that you don't have to worry about this. Because otherwise, it's the smaller museums, the smaller archives who simply can't afford to do this. And they'd look around if they could, even if they pay a nominal fee, they could set up their own community collection activity and say, that's where it's going to be, that's where it's preserved, that's where it's archived, great, let's do it.
Alexandra, get microphone over there.
I think it would be very useful to have some more research into who these contributors are, the kind of motivation research that this universe are looking at. Quite a lot of us here were at an event in Oxford last week looking at measurement tools for the passive audience, but we need much more information on how we measure who the contributors are and what motivates them to come and participate.
One last reflection over here.
I think what would have been really useful for sort of project I was working on would be a sort of community friendly sort of description or presentation of who JISC are. just in terms of sort of building trust with communities. We've got the logo and the website, but people still weren't clear and a bit sceptical.
Yeah, I'll pass that one on.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, well, I want to say two final things before I hand back to our host for the day to close the event. The first is that I didn't really need much notice that we were running out of time. This device I'm holding on my hand has a red light on it, illuminated, that says low bat. Now, I've thought for a long time that if only I'd trademarked my name, I could have made a fortune from every manufacturer of digital cameras in the world. But it's too late now, I'm afraid, so I'll just have to be low. The second thing is that I recall, was it last year or the year before, when the JISC at their annual conference tried to evaluate the conference with these handheld assessment things. Was that it's the one in London, yeah. And, of course, there were a series of questions thrown up on a screen to ask what people thought about the day, and everybody scored it in real time, and it was deeply embarrassing for some people because they got the message they didn't really want to hear in one or two areas. I'm not going to do that, but I think I can say I've enjoyed today, but then I'm entitled to say that, and then I'll make a run for it. The way I like to assess whether it's been a success or not is very simple, that I'd like you all to applaud yourselves and we'll see how loud you applaud, and on that basis we'll know how well we've done. So let's try it, shall we? So well done, everybody.